Log Talk Radio.
The time is now 6:03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3:03 p.m. on the West Coast, and wherever you are in the world, that's the time it is where you are. Good evening and welcome to the TMTS. It's the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. And I want to welcome you this Saturday. It's a nice Saturday here, and we have an interesting conversation about the startup, interesting topic, and I'm glad to have a guest to join us to share their knowledge and their understanding of what we're going to talk about. As you well know, this past couple of weeks, there have been a lot of different cases that are coming across the court dockets that are very important cases, crimes or incidents, I should say, that occurred a year ago, 2 years ago or so, and they're just hitting the courtroom. But before we get into, you know, this topic, I want to welcome on the board, I'm about to open up their mic, the lady of the house, Miss Janet Davis, the co-host, one of the co-hosts of the TMTS. How you doing? And happy Saturday, Janet.
Happy Saturday to you, too. I'm just glad today was not a freezing cold day, you know. So I'm
well,
looking forward to
that. That's true. I appreciate it. Yeah. It, fortunately, it hasn't been a freezing cold day. It's been crazy weather here in the ATL, which you look forward to. And I want to put this out here right away is that, unfortunately, a few of our co-hosts are not going to be able to make it. Officer Crenshaw is not going to be able to make it because this day is very important. It is his wife's birthday, and, of course, he has the honey-do list, not necessarily fixing stuff, but he has the honey-do list. And you do need to celebrate your wife's birthday. So happy birthday to Mrs. Crenshaw. And also Time and Shift, another co-host to not be able to make the show because he had a previous engagement. So it seems like it's going to be us here and all the listeners on the World Wide Web and in the chat room. You know,
wow.
When we watch these, so we're going to get right into the conversation. I want to schedule it at 6:10, but I want to go ahead and get into it. You know, we've been watching these cases, and the big problems with a lot of people were the juries on many of the cases, the selection of the juries, predominantly white, predominantly, you know, women, predominantly men, and all those different issues have come up over the few weeks. So I had asked an individual to come on the show by way of another individual. And I'm going to open up his mic and welcome him to the show because I appreciate getting more knowledge and understanding from people who experience it. You know, a lot of folks say, oh, man, it should have been this, it should have been that. Well, you know, this and that and the other. But you got to know a little more about how the judicial system works, correct? And understand how the selection process goes, you know, from the people who are actually there, who deal with it or have done or have dealt with it on an everyday basis. So I'm trying to find this particular clip, but I'm sorry, my board is starting to act up a little bit, but it'll be all right. All right, don't panic, you guys. So we're going to open up the mic right now to our guest this evening. Mr. Lyle Dixon has joined us. Good evening, Lyle. How are you doing? Happy Saturday to you, sir.
Happy Saturday.
I'm wonderful. Here in Las Vegas, it's a balmy 75 degrees.
Ooh,
you're
Las
in Vegas.
Vegas.
Oh, wow. It's been many moons since I've visited Vegas. My son used to live
Same
there,
here.
So I used to frequent it. Yeah, you used to frequent Vegas quite a bit. If you went big, you don't have to tell everybody but us, okay? So just keep that in mind. You have the number. So anyway, I want to look at, or I just want to let you share with the listeners a little bit about your background. You've been an officer. You've been a prosecuting attorney. You've been a defense attorney. Is there more that you can let us know, or better yet, I should say, how did you get this love for law enforcement and the justice system overall?
Well, I can honestly say I don't necessarily always love it because it's very frustrating at times. I'm currently a retired attorney. I'm not practicing anymore, but I worked in Arizona as a deputy sheriff for one of the departments there, and then I went back to Detroit, and I worked in Michigan for a few departments, and I also spent a little bit of time as a federal agent as well. I also was working on my doctorate degree, my PhD in sociology and criminal justice, and it's just something that for some reason seems to fit me pretty well, and so I've kind of made it part of my entire life since I was a police explorer in Michigan, starting at the age of 14, and I'm much older than that right now.
Wow.
Okay. Interesting journey. Very interesting journey. So you were a prosecutor at one point, am I correct? And
I was.
Then you became
was,
a. No, go ahead.
I was with the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, and I prosecuted cases there for them for a few years.
Okay. And what made the switch from prosecution to defense?
Well, even though I enjoyed prosecution, I personally began to see some abuses in the system, not through my prosecutor's office because they were extremely ethical, but I was seeing abuses in the system by law enforcement officers. And as a law enforcement officer, I spent several years doing public corruption cases involving police officers. And I became a firm believer that if somebody should be found guilty of a crime, it should be based on truthful evidence and not necessarily evidence that may not necessarily be as reliable as you would hope it would be.
Interesting point. Very well put there because that's what we're seeing a lot of, unfortunately, in some cases. Not all, but we are seeing it. So when you became a defense attorney, of course, you saw another side of it. What I want to get into is the issue that people have, or the problem that people have, is the jury and jury selection. And I'm sure everyone will agree that has been a hot topic in many of these cases. Can you explain to the listeners the jury process? Because from my understanding is that there is a jury consultant that actually does the background check on folks and, you know, and watches, you know, I guess the person's expressions and this, that, and other. Can you explain more to us about what the jury consultant does and how important they are for the attorney?
Well, you know, jury consultants, they get a lot of press, but they're actually not very popular with most lawyers. The vast majority of jurors don't go through a process where they're evaluated by a specialist, mainly because most clients can't afford to do it, because they can be extremely expensive. And I think you'll see that primarily in high-level personal injury cases or high-level criminal cases with a high profile. But essentially what they do is they think it's a science, but it's kind of more of a guessing game. And they try to evaluate that particular individual to see if they have any prejudices or anything prior to being selected as a juror. And if they do find that there is some prejudice, they can be excused as a juror for cause. And the jury selection is extremely important, but most lawyers that are doing trials, such as myself, we've taken classes, we've become educated as to what hot button issues we need to look for in regards to whether or not that juror can be fair or whether or not they're partial to one side or the other.
So if you don't mind sharing, I mean, just give us an example of certain hot button issues that most lawyers may look for.
Well, as an example, if you were, and I'll give you kind of an everyday example. Say you're dealing with a drunk driver that they had to do a blood draw, and say that drunk driver may be in the felony range where they have priors, or maybe they injured some people, or maybe even possibly killed some people. One of the people that I would try to see if I could excuse them from the jury would be a registered nurse who works in the emergency room who regularly does blood draws. Because they might infer their own personal experience into that particular case, which I'm evaluating them as a potential proper juror.
I follow you, right. So because they may have some prejudice there. Am I correct?
Yes, basically,
or
yes.
Should I say it? Yeah. Basically, yeah, they might because they experience that. Janet, if you have any questions, go ahead and go ahead and ask whenever you're ready.
Right now I don't have question, but I have just a comment. It was nice to hear how the process is for selecting the jury, because a lot of people do have issues, you know, when the jury look like it's been specially picked to on the defense's behalf. You know, for example, the last two trials that I witnessed, the Kyle Wittenhouse and then the Aubrey trial, a lot of people were complaining about the jury selection. Yeah. Oh, thanks for clearing that up.
Well, if I can make a comment about the Arbery case, which I thought was quite interesting, is as they were proceeding through disqualifying certain jurors, even the judge made a remark about, yes, it does appear as though there is some discriminatory behavior going on here, but he cited the law, and the law in Georgia in particular allowed for that discriminatory behavior. And if you extrapolate this type of situation backwards, that's why it's extremely important who you elect as a representative in your state legislature or a state senator, because they're the ones that are making the laws, and those are the laws that the courts have to enforce. So this isn't right. like the court arbitrarily and capriciously going out and discriminating against one person or another person. It goes all the way back to your local state representative who's initiating that law that the judge is forced to enforce.
Right.
So it's a much bigger problem than most people realize.
Wow.
So it stems from, right, your lawmakers. That's where it begins. Correct. So, I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't realize that. And that's a good point.
No, So
for all you listeners, just keep in mind when you hear something you don't like to hear, don't blame the judge or the lawyers. Blame your lawmakers. So now when it comes to burden of proof, of course, you know, the prosecution has the burden of proof, correct? That's always been said in every case.
Absolutely.
Of course, yeah, and then when it comes to closing arguments, the prosecution has the last word. But then what I found interesting are the defendant options. Janet and I were talking about that. Different things that a lawyer can use, a defense lawyer, I should say, to defend their client. It could be, you know, mental health. It could be in the heat of passion. I mean, there's just a long list that I looked at the other day. Not saying you personally, but with all the different options, just in your experience, How does that all work out in a sense of where an individual pleads, okay, well, it was the heat of passion. I had mental issues. You know, how does that even get introduced, and how do you make that stick for a defense? You know, and is that discussed? And again, I don't want to put you on the hot seat and say that you personally, but how does that come about where there's so many options for the defendant out there and the choices that they make? And I'm sure you've seen some that you might have said, that's not a good defense based on what I'm seeing. Do you understand my question in a sense, or maybe not?
Absolutely. And the defenses that the defense attorneys have available to them are supplied by your legislature, as well as case law, as well as evaluations all the way up through the U.S. Supreme Court. You mentioned, say you have a mental illness. If you're acting in the heat of passion where all of a sudden you decide to take a life, that if you can show heat of passion, that would take it down from a first-degree murder to a second-degree murder, for example. So it would just lower the level of the homicide that you would be eligible to be convicted of. If you're looking right. at insanity, you're essentially, in layman's terms, you have to show that you don't know the difference between right and wrong, that what you thought you were doing was right as a result of your mental illness. And be honest with you, there's not that many cases where the person is found not guilty by reason of insanity or the mental illness actually becomes a valid defense. You'll see a lot of lawyers that say there's a real heinous crime, and I suspect, such as in the case of in Michigan that just happened in Oxford, which is a very lovely town, that the defense attorney's first thing, otherwise I think they would be committing malpractice, is to argue, hey, he needs to have an evaluation to determine whether or not he's mentally competent to stand trial. Most of the times that fails. It's pretty rare that somebody is actually incompetent, though I have had some cases where that actually has occurred. And so these are the defenses that are available, and the lawyer has to utilize their skills and their knowledge to determine which defenses are most applicable to the client. And even if the client says, hey, I don't want you to argue the fact that I'm insane, the lawyer still has an obligation to go against their client and have them evaluated. And every state that I'm familiar with has a psychiatric evaluation system set up where they have psychiatrists or psychologists on board, and they determine whether or not that person is in fact mentally capable of assisting in the defense and whether or not they knew right from wrong. And, of course, that can be attacked at trial by bringing in your own witnesses to rebut that, but it's a very hard situation to rebut.
Now, with that being said, the meaning of charges, you know, when we listen to the judge come and read the verdict in a case, or better yet, prior to that, when you hear the term they're being charged for 9 counts of such and such and such, and a lot of folks don't understand, you know, charges, anyhow, which you have, you know, malice murder, you have first degree, you have second. Can you explain the breakdown of the charges, you know, count 1, count 2, count 3, and et cetera?
Well, as an example, you know, there's various levels of, say, homicide or murder, depending upon which state you're in. First degree would be premeditated. That means you thought about it, you planned it, and then you went and proceeded. Then second degree would be something similar to heat of passion, where, say, you walk in and you find your husband cheating on you and you stab him or shoot him, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't something that you premeditated. And those are called lesser included offenses. So when and as in the Rittenhouse case, the prosecution attempted and successfully amended their complaint after the proofs. As long as the proofs can show that there's probable cause that he may have committed another crime other than what's originally charged, they have the right to amend the complaint to include these other charges. And that's what they did there. However, obviously the jury didn't buy that. And that's why he was found not guilty on all counts. Now, mind you, not guilty does not mean you're innocent. That means the prosecution failed to meet their burden of proof. And they're just saying, you didn't meet your burden of proof, so he's not guilty. That doesn't mean he's innocent. Another case similar to that might be an older case, which you may know of, a guy by the name of O.J.
Yeah.
Simpson. Just because he was found not guilty doesn't mean he was innocent, and that's why he was still held civilly liable in the death of those two individuals.
And another one, of course, when you look at the Trayvon Martin case, you know, that was early on in that case, the prosecution was accused of being overzealous, overcharging. You know, am I correct? Well, at least I do know that a lot of folks felt like that they went a little bit too far on the charges. They should have, you know, lowered it. Because, again, it comes to burden of proof for what you charge them for, right? So I heard a lot of that.
As a former prosecutor, I can say I don't ever believe that I ever consciously overcharged anybody. But as a defense attorney, I can tell you that it happens all the time. Yes, that does in fact happen. And basically what the prosecutors have a tendency to do is they throw everything at somebody, including the kitchen sink, if they can, to try to get a conviction. And that's why most prosecutors have a conviction rate in excess of 95%, usually up in the 97% to 98%. It's not unusual. Because they throw so much at somebody that they end up pleading guilty to something. That's not an unusual situation at all. Is that fair? Is that justice? They would say it is. Sometimes I would question that, depending upon the circumstances and the charges that were issued.
Wow.
Janet, do you have a question or a comment on that?
Well, I was just thinking about someone that I personally knew who got everything thrown at them and they were innocent. But they still, like the detective told me at the time, all it took was for one thing to stick. And he was going to be gone forever. And that's exactly what happened. You know, it was during the election period, and they threw the book at this person. I mean, he was 6'3", as far as height, and some of the charges, the person was 5'7". You can't be 5'7", 5 feet 7 inches, and then 6 feet 3 inches, you know. So,
yeah, that
but
is
right now
difference.
Today, he's still locked up because of the charges.
So you're saying there was a discrepancy in someone who was giving a description of the perpetrator.
Right. He got stopped because it was a robbery at a gas station, and he was going through, had went to the store and was going through the stop where they had blocked the road off and everything, and because he had a cocky attitude with the detective, he locked him up and threw the book at him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he had nothing to do with the
crime. I hope there was more evidence than that, that
well,
convicted
right.
him.
That's a Georgia case. I mean,
But of course, there has to have been more. I understand what Lyle is saying. That there has to be more than a discrepancy in height. It has to have been something else or more so. But now, I appreciate you sharing as far as the charges and the breakdown on it. With these cases, as I said, that are going on, coming up next is the case against Officer Potter, who retired after the shooting of Deontay Wright. I'm sure you're aware of that, which occurred in Minnesota right during the height of the George Floyd trial. This officer's case actually starts this Monday as far as the preliminaries, and then Wednesday is when opening arguments start. What is his name? The lawyer for George Zimmerman was recently on air, and his opinion was that the prosecution don't have a case based on the charges, this was unbelievable, but honest mistake on the officer's behalf. I'm trying to understand that. I mean, at him being a defense lawyer, and I understand that that's his job, but, you know, and again, it goes back to overcharging. I don't know if you're aware of what it is, but they say a lot of times in the reading of the charges, it could make this a mistrial, based on how the state is approaching it. And I'm sure you're aware of this case, right?
I believe this is where the officer thought they were tasing the individual and they ended up shooting him once in the chest.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, first of all, I feel really sorry for the victim in this case, and I also have sympathy for the officer because, to be honest with you, with the addition of the taser along with your firearm and the excitement that's going on at the particular time, this isn't the first time an officer has accidentally, and I believe it was an accident from what I've seen on the video and the response of the officer after they fired the round, that it was an accident. However, was there criminal negligence? It would generally appear so. I don't know all the evidence in the case, but still, wrongfully killing somebody. Some states have a thing called negligent homicide. It's actually a misdemeanor, but in Michigan, it's a circuit court misdemeanor. You're looking at up to 2 years in prison for that. Clearly, the officer was negligent. I think the officer admits that there was negligence. Clearly, there's going to be one heck of a civil suit if there hasn't been already, and they're going to lose that suit. But it all goes towards whatever Minnesota law is, and I'm not an expert on Minnesota law, but it certainly
correct.
Would appear that there was some form of criminal act in the negligence of the officer from what I know of the case. And, again, I don't know everything, and I might be incorrect based upon Minnesota law because all the states have different forms of similar laws. So the prosecution obviously felt that there was probable cause to believe that a crime was committed. That's why they initiated the prosecution, and we'll just have to respect the verdict of the jury once it comes back. And we may not necessarily agree with it, but we have to respect that particular verdict with whatever it is they decide, subject to review by higher courts.
Mm. Okay. And I know you only have a limited amount of time because you are in Vegas, but based on what you just said, because I recall a case where an individual got into a confrontation with a person, and this individual was, you know, in school, he was in college, he was doing great and everything, and there was a physical confrontation where he hit the guy and the guy died. I think I don't think it was from the blow. I think it was the guy hit his head on something or his head hit the concrete, and the guy died. And this guy was sentenced to prison. Now, I'm sure it wasn't malice. I'm sure it wasn't first degree. I believe it was like a second or third degree murder. But he didn't hit him to kill him. You follow me? So,
well, you're responsible for the result of your actions under the law.
Right.
And we've actually had a couple cases out here in Las Vegas in the last year or so where people have hit somebody and they have died. And one of them that died was actually an off-duty police officer. Whether
he
or not
threw the
you
blow
agree
or
with
he
it,
was that, the that, one. I'm sorry, was he
no,
the
he,
one
he
who
was
threw
killed.
The blow?
He was killed by somebody who punched him. And, you know, that could result in a manslaughter case, or some states may call it third-degree murder, fourth-degree murder. Everybody has a little different verbiage for it, but it could be a voluntary manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter. As long as your actions result in the wrongful death of a person, there usually is some criminal liability attached in most states that I'm aware of.
Right.
So.
Right.
It's unfortunate that, you know, when you commit an assault and battery, because that is a crime, and then that person dies of it. We do have a theory in civil court. It's called the eggshell thin-skulled individual. You take your victim as they come. So if, say, you tap the back end of somebody's car in a car crash and they hit their head and they die from a brain hemorrhage, you're responsible for that because you are the proximate cause of that injury, so you have to face the liability for it.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Some things can happen that are not intended, but you can be liable. That is true. Now, I know you only have a limited amount of time with us, but looking at this case with Ethan Crumpler or Crump, the young man in Michigan, and now his parents have been charged. Their bond has been set at $500,000. I think I read where this is like the 32nd incident that has happened on a school campus since August of this year. And that's 32 too many. I do believe they're going to say that, you know, there was some mental issues with the young man based on what he drew or allegedly drew. I'll say allegedly. Drew, because a teacher said she saw this drawing and so on and so forth. And according to the story that the parents called to the school, they had a little conference. The young man had a book bag. No one attempted to search the bag to see where was the gun, you know. And now the parents are being charged. If you were defending, and this is hypothetical, if you were defending a case like this, what would be the option you would take? Would you look at that? And, I mean, I'm just saying hypothetically, but you don't have to answer if you don't want to. And on the flip side of the coin, you were prosecuting it. What do you think the prosecutors should look at based on the information that you know so far?
Are you referring to the children or to the parents?
To the parents.
You refer to defending the children or the parents? Well,
the parents.
You know, it is highly unusual that the parents would be charged with involuntary manslaughter. And I'm real familiar with that whole area. I used to live in Oakland County. I know the sheriff. I've met him several times before. And I know the Oakland County Prosecutor's Office, which is an extremely good prosecutor's office, probably one of the best I've ever had to deal with, unfortunately, as a defense attorney. In that particular situation, it certainly appears just from the press releases that I've heard so far that the parents had enough knowledge to know that their son had some form of issues going on with his mental capacity, and yet they still went out and purchased a firearm, which they indicated was specifically for him, a 15-year-old, one who can't even really possess a firearm legally. And then when they were advised of it by the school, they chose not to do anything about it. To me, that appears to be gross negligence. That's not just mere negligence. That's gross negligence. And so it would appear, even though it's a unique situation, that there is a valid basis for charging what they charged with involuntary manslaughter. Because had they done anything to break the chain of the events, this situation would not have happened.
Right. Very true. Very true.
And it is a real travesty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't the mother even text the son and said she wasn't mad at him and he just shouldn't have gotten caught or whatever he had did at school?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's kind of hard to comprehend, especially, you know, like you said, 15-year-old with a semi-automatic gun, 9mm.
Well, what had but Janet, what had occurred I just wanted to say that for everyone that's listening, right, when he drew that picture that the teacher saw and they contacted her about it, and this is prior to the shooting, she had said, LOL, I'm not mad at you. You just need to learn how to not get caught. Drawing the picture is what she was referring to. So that does show some kind of, you know, on the mother's behalf of negligence of not taking what was reported to her seriously, you know, by him drawing this photo of a gun and of a person being shot and a smiley face on the photo. And this is what the prosecution, I'm sorry, the woman who spoke the other day said that was part of the evidence. Okay. So this is prior to the shooting. What gets me is that when after the picture was discovered, the family was called in and still the boy had the book bag or whatever, and no one questioned where was the gun at that time. That's what blows me away. They knew there was a gun. The parents did, knew he had a gun. Mm-hmm. No. Go ahead, Lyle.
Well, I don't know that anybody was really thinking that maybe he had that weapon with him, but it certainly would give, I think, a reasonable person, you know, some second thoughts about where is that weapon, who has that weapon, and why wasn't that weapon secured in the first place where he didn't have access to it?
That's my point. Right. That's my point, that if he's drawing pictures, the parents knew that he had the gun. Not saying that the school knew it, but in fact, I think there was something that said his new Christmas present or something that was posted. The thing is that where at the time when the photo was discovered of a gun, of a incident and everything, and when there was that conference, again, I say, that on both sides, meaning the school and the parents, no one brought any questioning of, well, where is this firearm now? You know, at the moment they were having the conference. That's what boggles my mind, that no one was trying to think of, well, does he have a gun? He does. Where is it now? That should have immediately been addressed, and probably four lives would still be here. You know?
Well, clearly there was a breakdown somewhere, and I think once this thing goes to trial, and a preliminary exam, everybody will have a lot better idea as to what happened. But I know a lot of people are just devastated over this. Nobody ever wants to respond to a school shooting, especially the police officers. I can attest to that. They're going to live with that in their minds for the rest of their lives.
Exactly. Hey, Lau, I'm not going to hold you long because I know you in Las Vegas, Nevada. Wish I could join you, my brother, when they come up with teleportation. That's when I'll start doing that type of stuff.
It's a great city to retire to.
Mm. Hey, you know what? The thing is that where I'm not much of a gambler per se, but I love the people watching. That's one thing I've always loved about Vegas. It gives you an eyeful. There's always something going. You know, they say New York is the city that never sleeps. I beg to differ. Las Vegas never sleeps. It's 24/7. So enjoy yourself. I'm going to let you run, and would you be willing to come back and join us again on another date?
Sure.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Okay. All right, you guys. Want to thank Mr. Lyle Dixon for joining us. You know, he did have some plans for this weekend, but he's kind enough to join us this Saturday. I was hoping that Officer Mason was going to make it and join us into the conversation. And as I said, Officer Crenshaw is celebrating his other half's birthday. Mrs. Crenshaw's birthday this weekend. So we weren't able to have all three of them here, but hopefully in the not-too-distant future, we'll be able to have another conversation. And especially as these trials continue, I do plan on scheduling more conversations as these things go on. Again, thanks to Mr. Lyle Dixon. Janet?
Yes.
I guess we learned a few things there, right?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. You know, so, I mean, a lot of valuable information about the jury selections and, you know, so even though he says he's retired, he seems like he's still up on the law, you know.
Yeah.
Michael, did you know that the U.S. Marshals had put a warrant out for the parents of what's his name, Ethan?
No, I didn't know. They had to put out a warrant?
Yeah.
They just disappeared?
Yeah, well, they went in hiding after they said they was told that they were going to be charged and they were supposed to appear in court and they didn't. They said they found them hiding in a warehouse.
Well, isn't that another charge? Isn't that another charge? That should be another charge, right? Well, evading,
right.
Eluding,
mm-hmm.
whatever term you want. Evading, eluding, you know, law enforcement when you're already told you have to turn yourself in. Because I'm pretty sure they all have lawyers. So
yeah,
that's
I'm looking at the wanted. I'm looking at the wanted posters.
Hold tight. This is Stan calling it. Hold on for a minute. This is Stan. Mm-hmm. Hold on just a minute. Hey, now I made the mistake and I merged you into the show by accident.
No. I just called a number. I was calling the show number, and a lady answered.
Oh, lady answered.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have you merged in now, because I'm on the air now, and I don't know what number was called. You mean like a recording or just an actual person?
I called the 516-531-9861 number, and some lady picked up. It was crazy. I even checked the number twice. Hey, I'm here. Let's do this. You didn't remind me.
516-531-9861?
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
That's the number to the show.
Yeah. Oh, well. Anyway, bro, I'm here. You didn't call me.
Okay.
But I'll get on you. Let's do this.
No, you said text you, and I sent you the text. If you take a look, you'll see the text as a reminder. I text you.
Got a hold of you. I'm sorry I'm late, bro. I've been on a bunch of stuff, but yeah, I'm here.
No problem. Well, you just missed Lyle Dixon, who's a former officer. I wish he would have called this a little bit sooner. He probably would have hung on. But
He was a man of many hats.
I just spoke it. I read that voice because I was like, oh, Lord, this voice sounds like somebody I need to open a bottle of wine with.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. But and he said that he would definitely there's Janet. But Lyle, interesting. I definitely want to schedule where you, Lyle, and Crenshaw at the same time.
But always call me because my phone be binging on text messages left and right. But anyway,
okay, of course.
You on live now. You can ask me anything you want. Let's do what if I can help you, brother. I'm here.
Okay. Well, we were talking about certain things about the Ahmaud Arbery case. In fact, Lyle had brought up some interesting points about how charges are made. So we went through all that and everything. But what we were going to switch over to, which Janet had mentioned, the fact that this new case, this Ethan Crumpler, is it Crumpler or Crumpley?
Yeah.
I think it's Crumpler. Now his parents have been charged. Okay. They have a $500,000 bond. But Janet brought it to my attention that they were avoiding arrest. They were supposed to turn themselves in.
Absolutely. Yeah,
now, that would be another charge, right? Evading and eluding?
No, because they're white. Of course not. What's wrong with you?
Well, Lyle's white, too. Go ahead.
You know, I'm coming here and keep it real. And 100.
I know.
I'm not worried about nobody's feelings. But
I was joking.
Today. That wasn't even brought up. Well, the attorney... the district attorney, you know, and her name is Karen McDonald, she did bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge did a good job, unlike the Rittenhouse trial, where I think that judge was the best defense attorney Rittenhouse had.
Right.
Oh, heck yeah.
You know, this judge seems to be on point and paying attention to what's going on. And, you know, I noticed that the Crumleys, they both had the $500,000 bond, which was proposed by the DA, which I agree with. They already ran. Okay? And when you say, well, they had intentions of turning themselves in, come on, Mike. Let's be hood for a minute. Now, I'm going to turn myself in to the sheriff to go to jail, right?
Right, right.
But I'm going to stop off first and take $4,000 out of the ATM. Come on now, because I might need commissary. No, you were trying to go and trying to figure out where you can go because the script has now flipped. Mm-hmm. See, and I got to scroll back for a minute and go back. I wasn't here for the Rittenhouse discussion, but I got to say this. When the Rittenhouse verdict was reached, and I said this on someone else's show, I want to clear the air. Black people do not have a black yellow pages where we all call each other and notify each other. But if we look at the protest, for lack of a better word, gathering after the Rittenhouse trial, wasn't a whole lot of black people there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why were we not there? Because collectively, I didn't call any of you and say, Mike, don't go. I think we all woo-sawed for a minute, and we said to ourselves, we want to sit back now and see what they do when one of theirs killed them.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got 200, period. So we're going to let the second string take the field on this one. And we said that. The media missed that. The black leadership even missed that. But the conscious black folks, with or without, have and have not noticed it. And I saw it. And only thing that I could say in my spirit, not even in my mind, not even in my collective consciousness, but in my spirit, the immortal words of Malcolm X came out to me and said these words, the chickens have come home to roost.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's interesting that you said that, because I want to say quickly that what I found, Janet, I'm sorry to interrupt. What I found interesting, and I said this before to you, Janet, is that when the verdict for the Rittenhouse case came up, some folks were like, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. And I was talking to someone, and they said, you know, I don't understand why folks don't believe the verdict. I said, yeah? I said, yeah. Even though he killed two white people, and he...
And maimed another one,
right, okay, of another. He said, you got to look at where this all began. And that's something that hit me. It was the whole unrest started from the shooting of a black person who lived, right?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Who lived. So then that person told me, he said, what would make you think that Kyle Rittenhouse would be found guilty for shooting anyone who was protesting for the shooting of a black man?
But, Mike, let me ask you this, brother. Now, I know you got your boots on, but I'm going to ask you to put on your waders. Because we're going to go deeper than that.
Into some shit, right. You can say it.
We can't just remove the war. We got to dig down, and it's going to hurt. We have lived through the last 5 years of the Karens and Kens. Now, people say, well, why is that relevant? It is relevant because it was white privilege on display that those in positions of power, black folks too, have chose to ignore. And when you ignore arrogance, not power or prestige or privileges, but when you ignore arrogance, you empower that. And ignored privilege becomes terrorism, which is what we see. Now, let's go further than that. Everybody, how did we get here? How did America get? America was founded on violence. I'm 59 years old. I grew up with a cap pistol, a water gun, bottle rockets, guns, BB guns. Couldn't wait to get a .22.
Cat guns.
James Baldwin said, when I was young, I would watch Gary Cooper and all the Westerns. And
Rifle
Gary
Man.
Cooper was shooting the Indians, and I rooted for Gary Cooper until I found out I was Indians. All of us had a G.I. Joe. Mike, don't lie, you had one. But then what's the question today? We want to blame rap music. We want to blame video games. But guess what? G.I. Joe was our rap music. The Cat Pistol was our video game. See, so it's not a matter of this generation is lost. The concept of human life in America is lost. As a police officer, here's my 25 years coming in. I'm going to say this. I'll be quiet. This is what bothers me with black folks and white folks. We don't give a damn about murder. Let's just be honest.
No.
Clear the air. Preachers, come on here.
Don't.
You can say it too. We don't care. We care what color the victim is and what color the shooter was. Because we're all on pins and needles waiting to see what color anybody was. But the fact of the matter, are you somehow any less dead because a black person killed you, a white person killed you? When that white cop kills that black person and we're protesting and we're going to their house and we're making their life miserable, as we should, we never seem to make it to Chicago where 13 black people killed 13 other black people. We don't even comment on that post. Why? Because there is no post. So I have to applaud, or not applaud is the wrong word. I have to recognize. When white folks are wondering where we're coming from, because I say to us, as James Baldwin said, I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. So are we outraged at the act or the act?
I have to ask you this, though, real quick, because you do have a great point. And I watch and I observe. I've become more of a watcher and observer. Before I do this show, I watch older people, young people, you know, and society as a whole, and try to absorb, you know, because there are two generations, or there's more than two, but there's generations that are trying to, what's the word I'm trying to say, that are trying to exist at the same time. And not everything is agreeable all the time. But when you talk about, you know, the shooting of black people and everything, when I look at or listen to young black people, what they listen to, what they believe in, and their thought process of society today. Yes, unfortunately, you have individuals who will speak up when there's a shooting of a black person and they want to go out there and march in the streets and everything. But there should be an uprising of the murder of anybody. When Reverend Al Sharpton did his prayer after the Ahmaud Arbery verdict, he said, and thank you, Lord, for, I'm not saying, but I'm saying verbatim, thank you, Lord, for us learning that not all white people are racist, because it was a majority white jury. And keep in mind, that was the main issue at the start of that trial, is that
right,
there was only one black, okay, hold on. There was one black juror, and everybody automatically felt like, oh, there's going to be a problem. It's all white. What's your thoughts about that? When the verdicts came down and all three of them were found guilty of pretty much what they deserved to be charged for.
Yes. Was I
from
shocked?
A predominantly white judge.
No, I wasn't shocked by it. Was I pleased by it? I absolutely was. Was I outraged at jury selection? Yes, I was, like anyone else. I'm human. But you know what transcends anything? Clear thought. Clear thought transcends all prejudice, black or white. And you know what I said to myself? I was angry at the jury selection. I said to myself, I'm here in Georgia. Mm-hmm. I don't know any one of those 11 white folks. None of them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 5 of them have black spouses. We don't know. So I cannot blame or automatically condemn these 11 white jurors. The reason why I didn't, like I said, once again, I didn't agree with the jury selection. But once again, let's be honest with it for a minute. How did those 11 white folks get on that jury? I'll tell you one thing about them. I know for sure all 11 of them are voters, registered voters. Hello, black. How many of us try to get out of jury
trial? Good point. Damn good point. Right.
Don't want to vote. So we don't get picked at a jury. How many of us don't have driver's license, don't have IDs? Okay, so I got to talk about us right now. It's hard. You know what? You get a cavity filled, it's going to hurt before it gets better. So we're going to go ahead and go there. And I'm telling you, it's my I sat as a police officer. I sat on the stand and looked at these juries that resembled that jury. And I had people I knew on that jury that were good white people. There are such things as good white people. There are, and there's a such thing as good black people. And guess what? There's some trash in both of them. And see, that's where we have fallen into this trap, that those in power want us to be at war with all white folks. And there's some white folks I'm at war at 24 hours a day. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But see, you can't beat up your allies sometimes. Those
right.
are left first. They lost money. They had jobs they could go to. They had kids probably they had to take care of. But they said, you know what, this is important. I'm going to fulfill, what's the word I'm going to say? Civic responsibility. Okay? How about that part? And I guarantee you this. We can yell about the people January 6th and what they did. And all they asked is to be in jail. I'll agree with that. But you know what I tell you? You go get them protesters. I'll tell you what all of them had in their back pocket. A wallet with a voter ID card in it. I'll tell you something else they had in their back pocket, probably a pocket constitution. I'm not justifying what they did. I think what they did was horrendous.
Right.
But for all of us on Facebook and social media who are condemning people like this because we don't believe with their political ideology, let's examine ourselves and say, am I being civically responsible? Yes, I think.
Yeah, you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt, but you know, you just said something that was really important there because, see, Janet, remember when Lyle said regarding some of the things that were said in the courtroom that it's not the judge's fault to allow it. It's not the prosecutor or the defense to allow it. Our lawmakers.
Mm-hmm.
Remember he said that?
Right. Yeah.
That, well, you know, if you're getting upset because a defense attorney is able to say this, just like when the defense attorney for one of the McMichaels made the comment about Ahmaud Arbery's seat. Your lawmakers, who you vote for, allow that type of comment or this, that,
and the law, the laws that's on the books here in Georgia allows things like that.
Mm-hmm. In Georgia, right.
But, but there's a very important point that I want to stress here.
Sure.
Not to absolve this man of what he said, because what he said was deplorable. But do you remember Mr. Goff said, we don't need no more black attorneys in here?
Right. Mm-hmm. Key word was black.
Okay, but now everybody, major media, carried that worldwide. Racist, let's get rid of this guy. I didn't like what he said. But see, this is the difference between a wise man and somebody who's reactionary. I did my research on this man. Jackie Johnson, who was the district attorney who was initially handed that case, held it for 74 days and didn't even want to prosecute it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do your research. This man here was in open warfare with Jackie Johnson in open court, had filed several complaints against her while he had, hello, everybody, black client, about her indiscretions, how she did her business. This man was the lone willow in the wind blowing the whistle on Jackie Johnson over a year and a half ago. All these black organizations were nowhere to be found. All of the black outrage was nowhere to be found. I don't like what he said. I deplore what he said. But when he said that, all of a sudden, everybody heard what he said, but nobody knows who he is. See, we have to dig deeper, because Jackie Johnson is in jail right now on her unwillingness, inability, or indifference as to prosecuting this very case. That was a landmark case, especially here in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to be educated, we're going to have to suck down the good stuff with the bad stuff. Everybody's mama on this show said, clean your plate. See, you're going to have to eat some stuff you don't like, but it's going to be good for you if you eat
it. That's right. You're right. Eat some carrots. Eat some beef.
That's why I love to be willing to talk about this and give me the time to say it, because I don't come here to pontificate. I don't need that, but I want folks – black folks listening, if you got to go to jury duty, guess what? We've been had hard times for 200 years. Suck it up. Get through that 2 weeks you on there and move on and be able to say, I was part of the system.
Right.
We have got to stop being professional victims. And then we've got to stop listening to those black leaders who use our professional victimhood to enrich themselves, because they have a name and show up. White folks are scared of them, because they might hurt their money. We feel we're going to get somewhere, and we still don't have the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act passed today. So much for power for black leadership in this country. And I'm not talking about the grassroots people. I'm talking about the folks that are in the limelight, because they're not getting the work done.
But now let me interrupt for a minute, because I'm going to share something real quick. I'm sorry, Stan, but I just got to thinking – when you said black folks get off your ass, I was listening to a show earlier today, Real and Raw. Janet, you know about that show. A.K.A. King, he's a co-host on there. And he was talking about some things. Turn off the television. Stop watching the television. This and the other. Stop watching the media. And we always hear of folks saying, don't trust, you know, the media. Donald Trump was president. It's fake news. It's everything. So he used the media, okay, to put out his propaganda. And then last night, I came home from work, and for some reason, I watched a movie. Now, me personally, I'm not one to watch those type of shows like Real Housewives of Atlanta and this, that, and the other, and all those, you know, reality shows, you know, the Kardashians and everything, because those are folks who have more than you have. And just follow me on this. But it really amazes me that people are so intrigued with these types of shows. They spend more time doing that than doing what they need to do to make the changes. Like Officer Stan just said, you know, get out there and vote, which was said earlier in the show, is that some of the things you dislike, is due to your voting practice or the lack of. You follow me?
Amen.
Of
Amen.
Not voting.
We as black people, you know, my show today was on two things, perception and reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these desperate housewives or whatever, the title alone should tell you something. Desperate?
Right.
That ought to be enough, but it ain't enough for us.
And real, and real.
Don't read with that.
Because there's nothing real about a reality show. It's all scripted to a certain extent. It's
right.
All.
It is.
It's all that. But I want to say this real quick. When I said I watched the movie, for some reason, I went back and watched a movie called A Time to Kill.
I remember that one.
I'm pretty sure all of you seen
yeah.
that movie starring Samuel
yeah.
L. Jackson and the white actor.
Wow.
Okay, and the key part that got me in that movie, and I'm telling you the truth, I don't know why I did it. It was like 1 in the morning, and I sat there and watched it. And true enough, it's a movie, but it's reality in a sense, because the shit that was in the movie actually happened in real life, not necessarily the movie, but just the whole scenario of the daughter being raped, of the, you know, the jury and the, you know, all the whole, you know, things that happened. But when you mention the NAACP, and no disrespect to them, in fact, the president of Cobb County chapter here, her and I have been friends for many years. I love her with all my heart and everything. And I do question her. She's been on the show before. You know, I want you to come back on. Come on and share. She's done that. And see what is your chapter doing here regarding certain things here. But the whole thing I'm saying is that where in this particular movie we saw where it was limelighting, you know what I'm saying, for an organization. And it shouldn't be that way. But unfortunately, it goes on.
Of course it does. I look at our young people today. Why would mm-hmm. I go out and encourage any young person today to join the NAACP? They're looking at us fighting for voter rights that I thought was done in the 1960s. Hasn't been finished. See, we have become that person who starts the race but never finishes because we get enough accolades. If they think we're done, we go, well, we must be done because they think we are. And we don't finish anything. You know, mm-hmm. when I look at the NAACP today, and I'll get to the NRA in a minute, but when I look at the NAACP today, and I let them, I watch them look at this Rittenhouse verdict and never make a statement about Marissa Alexander, who didn't kill anybody, who was a victim of domestic violence, who shot a round off at her house at an abusive husband, injured nobody, who went, when I sit back and I look at Crystal Kizer, who was still in jail because she killed the man that sex trafficked her.
Mm-hmm.
I can't expect white folks to look at this and analyze it and say, well, we're on both sides of the fence right now. We need to come to a reckoning point when I got black people who are ultimately affected by it because all of us on this phone, male or female, can be Marissa Alexander or Crystal Kizer tomorrow. Self-defense doesn't work for us, and the NAACP says nothing. They're there in the heat of the moment, but the heat of the moment's not good enough. See, that's why black people have not progressed. We got these so-called pseudo-leaders who want to be in the heat of the moment till they get on CNN, MSNBC, and Fox, and the right black people like them. That's bullshit, man. You dig down in your soul, and you get in this fight for what is right. When I gave up 25 years of my life as a police officer to speak up about Philando and Alton Castillo and went to work the next night, out of the 300-some-odd people in the Waco PD, all I did was hit the Facebook Live and talk about it, and that night, nobody spoke to me.
Mm.
And I did my next 2 years there. I didn't need the media. I don't need – I'm not a martyr. See, I'm not going to be nobody's martyr because I got the hammer and the nails. You're not going to crucify me. I'm bringing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't preach protests and rallies. You can protest all day long, but guess what? The very people you protesting to, their offices are closed and everybody's at home getting paid, and you protesting an empty building because your ass don't vote.
You know what? It's interesting that you said that because Jay King, which you guys know I used to be, or we used to be on the Jay King Network, that's one thing he says, I'm not going to march down the street because it does nothing. And that's an interesting point because marching is just a day. And then at night, you have the looters and rioters, black and white. You know, unfortunately, the media, as they say, make it seem like it's all black folks. But there are folks who go out there and do the looting and rioting and the destruction of property to make it seem like it was Black Lives Matter, to make it seem
But,
like
Mike,
it
we let them. It's
people.
Because... We
right,
let them.
Right,
our,
exactly.
Our leadership lets them.
See exactly.
Why? Because our leadership
they don't speak up
wants
on
to
it.
Be on CNN. They want to be on Fox. They want to be on MSNBC. Well, I don't want to say anything. And this is what gets me with so-called black leaders, and it burns me up. I'm going to say it. If folks don't like it, then they'll get
no, go
over
ahead.
It. This is what gets me with black leadership. You got to stop being black until it's time to be black. That bothers me. You're worried about your white business partners. You're worried about your contract with CNN. You're worried about everything else. And in the meantime, black people are being used and brought on as pawns. There ain't no black person going to come on MSNBC, which is progressive, and say anything that I said today for fear of angering black people because MSNBC don't want that. And Fox damn sure would never ask me to come because I'll light them up. And my thing is, Shakespeare said it, to thine own self be true. And, Mike, you know me. I'm not going to give my website. I'm not going to talk about my show because it ain't about me. I have no GoFundMe. I make $2,758 a month retirement. Everything I do on my show, every video I put out and edit myself, I pay for. I have allegiance to nobody. I'm not BET. A white person is not going to buy me out and make me dance with sand in my pocket. I'm not built that way. I am 100. I am not scripted. I'm going to answer what you give me. I'm going to say how I don't care about likes, followers, and clicks. I just simply don't. I'm not a black radical. I'm a radical for right. And the God I worship ordained me and empowered me with a Joshua spirit. And he said to me, as you do unto the least of my people, not the ones that look like you, think like you, or vote like you, but the least. I don't give a damn whose feelings get hurt. Because guess what? The people who I'm speaking for have not only been hurt, they've been devastated.
Yeah.
I mean, truth be told, you don't have to apologize. Do not say sorry. Do not even put that out of your mouth because you're just speaking the truth, you know, because, you know, I get a lot of flack from folks this and the other of how this show is run because I don't allow it to just go, you know, in any direction that someone calls in and feels like they want to do, right? But I always keep it to where respectful, you know.
Yes, sir.
I've always made that a point.
Language.
No. It's cool. Because when I post the show, I put it rated R because, I mean, I don't mind if anybody cuss. Just don't cuss each other. Don't disrespect each
other.
Yes, sir. See, if you're adamant, if you're, you know, feeling a certain way about a topic, you got to say shit, fuck, asshole, whatever. I don't care. Just don't say that to somebody else who's on the show.
You
follow
right.
me?
You know,
that's my
me,
rule.
Profanity is another punctuation point in the English language. It is a verb.
Correct.
When I use it, it is an exclamation point. I want
Correct.
People to know I'm not here for show. I'm not going to tell anybody, follow me, come look at my website. It doesn't matter whether if 10,000 people look at my website, Mike, it's going to cost me the same amount next month.
Right.
If nobody goes to my YouTube or whatever, it's going to cost me the same. I don't care about that because I spent 25 years of my life watching women today who reach out to me on Facebook because their sons were wrongfully killed. And guess what? They can't get the mothers of the movement to find them. They can't get the NAACP to find them. The police department ain't helping. The sheriff's department is implicated. So they reach out to me on Facebook, and I respond to these ladies, and I call them, and I talk to them. And it's amazing when I start giving them here's the steps to go. Here's what the police department didn't do. Here's what should have been done. See, my people perish for lack of knowledge.
Right.
And those of us, black folks and remaining white folks, who have that knowledge and aren't disseminating it, you're part of the problem. And I'm going to end with this unless you ask me something. You know, we're in December. Next month
right.
is January. All the white people are going to want to run around and quote Dr. King and I Have a Dream speech. I don't dream. I'm woke. Been woke. I learned that whole speech in fourth grade. We had to memorize it.
Right.
I want everybody to go to the letter from the Birmingham jail. And for those who are not real computer literate, just go on YouTube and put in white moderate speech. And when Dr. King talked about the white moderate, now that's the same Dr. King that you love to brag about the I Have a Dream speech when he called out the white moderate. And he said, the man, I've grown gravely disappointed in the white moderate who feels he can set the timetable for another man's freedom, who says, while I agree with your cause, I cannot agree with your method of direct action. Well, 200 years of patience, you got to get direct sometime.
Right. It is. And, you know, and first of all, I want to say thank you for calling in, regardless of you came in a little late, but you came right on time. Okay. I truly appreciate it because there's a lot of issues that we're dealing with, not just in the court system, which that's what we were talking about and that's what we started the show with, but just within our own community. And it bothers me at times where we blame white folks for this and any other. But the thing is, we have to check ourselves is the bottom line. We really do have to look at what are we doing as, and this is what I'm saying to the listeners, as Officer Mason just said, we got to check ourselves and we got to, you know, and every show, not just this show, but every show I know, when it comes to election time, you need to register. You need to register. I think sometimes it falls on deaf ears to a lot of young people and older folks. I'm calling out everybody because it is very important for you to look at, don't just vote for the president, Barack Obama, or I don't want Donald Trump in. You got to look at the people who are actually lower down the totem pole that are controlling your community. You follow me? You're not really looking at the big picture. It starts lower down. And a lot of folks don't understand that. Am I correct?
You're correct.
As far as the law, as far as your community, you know, there was a person who said, which I said already, stop watching television. You don't have to stop watching television, stop watching the things that are negative and watch the things that are positive. Someone said, oh, well, my daughter watches all these videos and everything. She don't have to stop watching the video. Stop watching the negative video. Watch more positive. To me, I mean, the media... Everybody says, oh, it's the media that's doing this. The media's doing that. Well, let's think about the term media. It's everything that you look at and listen to that you allow through technology. Everything you look at and listen to, that's media. Your choices is what's important of what you watch and listen to. On a show earlier today, they said, take 1 week off and stop looking at the television. I said, you know, I love my nature channels. I'm sorry. I'm going to watch it. On Facebook, there's Facebook Watch. I watch cooking shows. I watch nature shows. I watch it. I learn a lot. I watch videos from different countries of how things are done in different countries, different than what we do here. It's interesting. But I refuse to watch these scripted news channels, television shows. I refuse to watch them. Back when I was a kid, yeah, couldn't wait to get home and watch this scripted show. But as an adult, I don't do that. And I said that, I know, and you're probably thinking, what the hell is Michael trying to say? I said that where, you know, you can use media to your benefit. Google is a form of media. When people say Google this, Google that, Google's going to give you a whole lot of different answers, right? Google's going to give you a whole lot of different responses to what you're looking for. It's up to you. It's up to you to decide what you're going to click on, what you're going to read. You just click on one thing, that's what you're going to understand. Click on another, you might get a different answer than the first thing that you clicked on. But it's up to you to determine what is pro and con.
Mike, I often tell my friends, I would rather Google things and do the research instead of believing everything that you see or read on Facebook. Too many people take social media and believe what they're saying without researching themselves, you know, because
there is a difference.
There's
a difference. Right. There is a difference on. Well, the thing is that, well, right. There's a difference between Facebook and Google and other social media platforms. Facebook is a melting pot of lies, majority lies. Made up shit, okay? It's a melting pot. I've seen many times where folks would post something that such and such died on Facebook. Be like, what? You know? Folks will post stuff, but I'm gonna say this: will post that someone died today, and hell, they died 5 years ago. But some people are so ignorant to think it's recent.
Okay, but let's talk about that other dynamic that we haven't mentioned yet, but. Well, see, we're modern right now. Let's go back to the grassroots. See, I like to go back to the sum total of the problem.
Okay.
Off of our friends and family sometimes, okay? Because the first lies you heard, you didn't hear on Facebook. You heard in friendship. You heard in family. The rumors. Some of the people that are out here getting shot today aren't shot because of a Facebook post. They shot because boo-boo told Ray-Ray who told so-and-so at the club. So, I mean, brother, I agree with 1,000% what you say.
Mm-hmm.
But if we want to cleanse ourselves, Facebook is nice, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it is folks do. But you know what? If you keep that toxic friends and family pool, the friends and family plan, that's what it'll do you every time. That's why most of us are miserable right now. And it comes to Facebook, it's friends and family. Let's be real about it. Clean that out.
That means
sometimes you may want to kick somebody that you got to clean your demons out. They don't like you because of what you did. See, because when we see a post, the first thing we do if we know that person is we call that person.
Oh, we share it.
And they're full of mess. We don't research nothing. We jump
on it.
Yeah,
we just share it.
Because Kiki or Betty said, amen, brother. So
mm-hmm.
I
we
agree.
Share it.
Exactly.
Share.
We need to.
Because
you
share.
Know what? We need to clean out the social media. I agree with you, brother.
Yeah.
But it's very important.
And with that being said, though, But with that said, when I see those type of stories pop up on a Facebook page, I don't share it. What I do, I go to Google, I go to Bing or whatever, and I see, okay, let me see who is actually following this. I go to TMZ, who pretty much is on point. They've been, there has been times they've had to retract some sort. But TMZ is pretty much on point, okay? And then we'll get into later on about what TMZ means, what most folks don't know. But it's still the media, right? So you have to research the media. See, when a person posts something on Facebook, I don't automatically like, oh, wow, you know, let me go ahead and share this with all my friends. But a lot of people do. And come to find out, it's a hoax. Come to find out, it's not true. But it's already out there because you don't share it and your friend don't share it and this, that, and the other. And it's false information.
Right, but Mike, let me ask you this. And you tell me if you don't think this. And we're going to be, we're cultural for a minute, so white listeners, excuse us, because we're going to let you hear it, but we're going to go right there. Let me tell you what the first Facebook was, the first Instagram, the first Twitter, and the first YouTube.
That's cool.
The Black Barbershop, the Black Beauty Pulse for our community. If you wanted to know who did what to who, when, and where, and why, it was there, along with a lot of wisdom and good discussion. So Facebook's not new to us.
Right.
We sat in the barbershop. When you left the beauty parlor, as your host, baby, you knew everything everybody was doing. You knew it. And you know what? 90% of it was true. Some of us would walk out and spread it. Some of us would say, it ain't my business. And some of us would say, I don't know. That represents the okay click, the people who see the post and let it go, and the folks that share it. I'm talking to the Black community right now. Because, see, Facebook is not a miraculous discovery of Mark Zuckerberg. We had Facebook way back in the day. It's called the barbershop and the beauty parlor. Now, what is happening on your head? What's on your head, your face? So we was there long before you, hello, Mark Zuckerberg, okay? You marketed it, but we've been doing it. So, Black folks, let's stop acting like we don't know. We don't understand. We were the first. Why does everybody go to the barbershop? Even on your day off, you in the barbershop. Why? To find out what's going on.
The barbershop
and the beauty shop. NBC. See, we got to take some credit in this. I refuse to give Mark Zuckerberg the credit. Why he blocks me and limits me on what I say. And Mark Zuckerberg gets to say what I say or don't say because he got Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, he can limit whatever you say. Right.
We got to take
and Messenger and TikTok.
Teachers reach. Exactly. It's time to do our own thing. Facebook ain't new to us. We have Facebook in the barbershop. If I didn't like you, I said it to you in your face. Where did I say it? In the barbershop. Facebook. We didn't hide behind likes and clicks. So Facebook is not new. I won't give them any credit. I refuse to. Rap music, gangster rap music was the first medium. You want to say global media, that was the first global media Facebook because it was a representation of what we saw in our neighborhoods every day with everybody called out. I will not give Mark Zuckerberg credit for that.
Right. But wasn't Facebook first started out for college students before
yes.
it got blown up and everybody started using it?
They saw in it, we can make money. Oh, you might have had good intentions in the beginning, but when they saw they could make money, now we have this fiasco we have today. And my thing is, when I hear brothers and sisters say, my show, I do my live on Facebook. Well, I don't need Facebook for damn it. I don't. I don't need Facebook.
Right.
Facebook is interested in lifting up my voice or my platform or my voice or your voice. Facebook
right.
is interested in lifting up their margins. Let's get real about it, people. Do you think the people support Nike care what tennis shoes you wear, what style of Nike you wear? No, as long as it's Nike, they don't care. See, we've got to stop being consumers and start being producers. Stop being renters.
Thank you, because that has been a topic. I'm sorry, that has been a something that's been said, is that what we used to be producers, but now we're more set as consumers.
and that's the sad part.
But
is that we become more reliable on someone doing something or creating something for us that we already that we already have the knowledge to do our own.
But in policing, it's our fault. We are professional victims because there is a segment of black leadership. I'm not inserting no names. Y'all do your own research. But there is a segment of black leadership that prospers off the denigration of black people in the criminal justice system in America. We all know who they are. We don't say anything because we don't want to offend our friends and family that support these people. I'm not knocking them. I don't know them personally. Thank God I don't know celebrities because I can say what I want. They don't like it, get over it. But I'm going to tell you, that's a fact. There is a demographic of people, I'm talking black folks right now, in positions of power who we never hear from till Pookie and Ray Ray are shot.
I'll give you the numbers. There are 15, I believe, and I may be wrong, but I'm going to, you know, just put it out there. According to an article that I read, there are 15 black billionaires. Billionaires, not million, billionaires.
Right, but I'm not even talking money. I'm talking, because people with money, you know what, them billionaires ain't crap, Mike. They got money. That doesn't mean they can move people. Because most of your billionaires, the average person doesn't know who they are. I'm talking about the people we see on the news every day when a catastrophe happens. See, I'm not a fan of FEMA. I appreciate what FEMA does. I love FEMA. I'm glad FEMA is there. I don't want to see FEMA at my house. I'm not a fan of the fire department. I love those guys. Appreciate what they do. God bless them. But I don't want to come home and see the fire department at my house. And the leaders I'm talking about are the same people that you don't want to come home and they're standing in your driveway with CNN, MSNBC, and Fox waiting to talk to you because guess what? Something didn't happen. And you in trouble.
Okay. I understand that point of view now that I thought about it. Right.
And I'm not going to name no names because out of respect for you and your show, because I have my beliefs, you have yours, and that's fine. But my thing is on my journey for police reform and equality. It's for the least of the people, not just black people. I don't care about celebrities. They come on my show or they don't come. I don't reach out to them because I don't care. You just have more money than me, but guess what? I'm making my light bill meet, and I'm still here with little to nothing.
Right.
And you got everything, and you're doing nothing. See, George Clinton, some of the wisest words I've had, and I'm going to end with this. George Clinton said, to each his reach. If I don't cop, it's not mine half. Mm. And I'm reaching, baby. And if I got to stand on your neck to get there, I'm going to get there, not for stand. Because it's going to make the climb a little less strenuous on the next young brother, white or black, coming up behind me.
Now, see, you went ahead and mentioned George Clinton, and that's what I listen to almost every day. You know, I listen to a lot of the old music and everything every day. But, you know, a lot of folks don't realize George Clinton is a very intelligent individual.
Absolutely.
You know, not just through his music, but just in general. The brother is deep, and God bless his soul. He's still here among us, you know, to share that knowledge, not just through music, but just through some of the words, you know. And some folks who probably listen now, I'm going to recommend that you just listen to his, not just the music, well, the music and just the message that he put into it from back when Parliament used to wear suits, you know. Honestly, they used to wear suits that had Parliament right across it. A lot of folks have never seen that photo, but if you Google, you'll find, there we go again.
If I can
add, you know,
to our people, don't just listen to the music. That's our problem. We listen.
Listen to the message.
We don't, you know, we listen, but we don't hear. You got to live what you hear. Black people, we have always been. We're very spiritual people. We're very musical people.
Mm-hmm.
We beat a drum for a reason. Good, the beat is good. But what is the message in the beat?
Well, if you go back into history, the thing is that, you know, back in the days of in Africa and also here in what they call America, is that the drum was a message. the way the drum was played was sending a message, almost like Morse code. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
a proven fact. It was a message. If you think about it, in Africa, a lion can roar and another lion can hear it a mile away or more. Think about that amazing thing about it. So back in Africa and even here in the United States during before it was the United States, I'll say it again, the drum was like a Morse code in a sense. It could be heard.
Exactly. And Mike, to bring your point into today, we can go into a stadium with 60,000 people
mm-hmm.
at a football game. The referee blows the whistle and the whole stadium becomes silent, including the players on the field.
Right.
It's not what you say, it's when you say it. It's not how much you talk. We don't need to be verbal shotguns. Shotgun makes a lot of pellets, hits a lot of people, knocks down nobody. We need to learn to be an assassin, a sniper. A sniper sits back, watches his target, figures out who's in charge, calculates his shot, fires it, and everybody wonders where it came from. I'm not talking about physical right now. I'm talking about social. Start going for the head of the organizations. And stop worrying about the underlings. We burn ourselves out marching and protesting on the chief. Well, the chief has a city manager. The city manager is responsible to the mayor and the city council. But we don't vote, so we sitting there with a sniper rifle with no rounds in the chamber.
Right.
And I'm not talking about physically killing anybody. I'm talking about intellectual empowerment. Mm. Everybody who stormed that Capitol January 6th, most of them were voters. And had the most powerful person in the world empowering them. And we
right.
sit back and think about Hitler and scratch our heads and go, how the hell did that happen? Was everybody dumb? Well, you just saw it.
Right. Hey, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're at the 7:37 of the show, and I had mentioned earlier, and I had posted, I think, earlier, that starting this month and starting tonight, and I really want you to come back on the show so we could continue the conversations that we have, but we're going to do a new segment on the show. You know, I remember back in the day when I used to DJ and play custom before I used to DJ, the music that we listened to then. And I think about the music that we hear now. So here it is in a nutshell. Every Saturday, I'm going to play an instrumental track that I'm sure you used to shake your ass off if you're in my age category or in, you know, back in the day. Janet, you already said, you know, you probably didn't hear this in it. So every Saturday I'm going to play one track, and here's one I'm going to play. And if you can answer the name of the artist and the song, each week we have a gift for you. So we're going to take a quick break, come right back. I'm going to play this track, and just keep it in mind, all right? I'm sorry that I have to cut off the conversation, but I have to do this. We're starting this in the month of December. You're listening to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia, with my co-host Janet Davis, special guest Lyle Dixon, who was on earlier in the show, and Officer Stan Mason, the host of... In fact, I want to come back and let you share with the listeners how they can hear you on Saturday also, because your show is very interesting. It's live stream. I love it. I appreciate, you know, you and all your guests on your show. So we'll be right back. Here's the first song of Name That Tune. We'll be right back. Welcome back to TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL. And that is one clip I'm going to play this Saturday. And if you can guess who the group is or the song, what we're going to do every Saturday is play instrumentals that we used to, you know, get down to back in the day. And some of you young folks probably don't understand it. But I'll give you a hint. One of the members left and became a major recording artist and writer. There's your hint. Should be simple enough. All right. So jot it down. Keep it in mind. I mean, you can Google it. You can go to SoundHound and everything. I wish you wouldn't cheat, but, you know, we're going to keep doing this every Saturday, and the winner that has the most correct answers will get a gift pack from TMGS. All right? Trust me, you're going to enjoy this. Hey, Officer Mason, you there?
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, man, do you have a guest on it, though? Or you have an idea who that was? Don't tell, but you have an idea?
Yeah, you know me. Yeah, I do.
Okay. Janet, do you?
I don't have a clue.
Okay. Well, that's what's going to make it fun. Next Saturday, we're going to bring up another one, and we're going to keep it going throughout the month of December, and we're going to have a lot of fun. Hey, you guys, you know, I truly appreciate all the guests that come on this show, and Officer Mason, thank you so much for calling in. It came in a little bit late, but I'm glad that I got you here. But I appreciate you sharing your thoughts, your really to say, you know, your feelings about just the reality of what's going on now. I truly appreciate it and look forward to you coming back on. Real quick, please share with all the listeners your show and how they can tune in and listen every Saturday.
I'll let you do that. And you can do it through a post if you want. Because to me, I stay in the background. I don't do a GoFundMe. Nobody can give me any money anywhere. Because God didn't call me to be out front. There's enough people out front.
Right.
He called me to pass the mic. And when you get the microphone for somebody who's not afraid to hand it to you because they just got done laying it down, that's good enough. I think we have too many people who want to be up front.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, dude, you know my website. That's you.
But I still want you to share and let folks know. I still want you to share how they can hear you and your show. See, I'm not the type of person who don't want to share, you know, with my listeners, especially when you're a guest on the show and
yes,
you speak truth and you speak what you feel. And if I can agree with you, I think there's many that can listen in to your show. So I would appreciate it if you would go ahead and share,
sure,
if you don't mind, you know, your contact to listen to your show on Saturdays. A couple of hours before we come on, you know, because they can learn a lot more and hear a lot more from you.
Well, it's real simple. You can go on Facebook and just put in Stan Mason, STANMASON, and you'll see a picture of me and my granddaughter, along with me with a picture of my daughter, my son, and my son-in-law. That's how you know it's me. You can reach me on Blog Talk Radio, / Stan Mason. You can find me at my website, stanmason.com. I'm nobody big. I know some things, and I reach out to those who reach out to me. If you get a reply from me, it's from me. I have no staff. I don't have any of that stuff. I don't want to be internet famous. I don't want to be anything bigger, but if I can help you, problem, something you don't understand, you can't find an attorney, I'm not telling you I can find you an attorney, but I can help, maybe help you with reasons why you can't find one. So that's what I do. Everything I do, I fund myself.
Okay.
I don't solicit money, don't need it. God ordained me to do what I do. I have a Joshua spirit. My patience sometimes can be short, but my sword is big. And sometimes you got to slaughter the enemy before you can sit down and rationalize why. That's and we're beyond. You know, forgiveness without reform is foolishness. And that's not from a violent aspect. It's from a proactive civic aspect. I don't have patience. If you don't vote, don't contact me. Don't bring me your problems of what the system did and you don't vote. Because I'm going to tell you, I'm going to hang up on you. And it's hard to be concerned about people who unfollow you when you're not following them. I don't care. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not a solution.
Right.
I'm an advocate. Thanks, brother.
Hey, man, thank you. Janet, before we get out of here, anything you want to share about the show today?
No, was very, it was a learning experience from both people from the lawyer, Kyle, I can't think of
Lyle,
his name.
Lyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Stan Mason. You know, you took one of my favorite sayings. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. I'm a firm believer in that. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I preach that every day.
I truly appreciate everyone who chimes in, who calls in. You know, I truly appreciate having this forum because it's a blessing to have, like I said before, when we can have a dialogue, a conversation. Some shows get into, you know, arguments and this and the other. I don't like to call them arguments. I like to call them debates. But some do lead to arguments. There is a difference. And I try to keep it that way, of where we can debate and still be friends. And I'm thankful for all the people who, you know, continue to join the TMGS and listen in through the internet, worldwide, and call in to the show. So thank you guys. Hey, it's 7:49. We're going to get out of here in a minute, in a few minutes, I should say. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, how I'm trying to figure out how what Austin Mason said, we can get that out to people to realize you can actually make a difference. I listen to different shows that always preach a lot of different things, and Austin Mason actually shared a lot of things here. Lyle shared a lot of information with us in the early first part of the show. But our question, who's listening and who's actually taking this seriously and moving forward with it? The answer is there, you guys. The answer is there. Media, social media, television, radio, whatever, Facebook, this, that, and the other. Yeah, Fox News and everything. We went through the gamut of all these, you know, so-called information givers. But to me, my question is, how do we filter the bullshit from reality? How do we do that?
Mike, you're doing it. Keep doing what you're doing. To the community, you know, you're going to need Mike before Mike needs you. You're going to need me before I need you. I don't live on likes and clicks. Y'all don't feed me. I'm giving you 25 years of experience of what I know to be true.
Right.
You can tune in and look at all these pretty pasty-looking women on TV all you want. You can listen to all these black folks who talk all this stuff on primetime TV that you ain't never even touched.
Right.
Or you can walk out the front door, walk next door, and sit down and crack a beer with a neighbor and say, what you think? Then get up and do something. Go to your quiet place, your prayer room, your place of solitude, and ask yourself that question we're all afraid of. I hear. Guess what? It ain't to run a football. but that's short-lived.
Right.
Same to put out a rap album, because if you're not shot in the dead in the street, that's short-lived.
Right.
I'm not knocking anybody's success. To each his reach. But at the end of the day, you'll end up like me. You'll be 59 years old. God bless me to still be in good shape. And when you find that path you were meant to be on, it's glorifying. You may have to eat ramen noodles some nights. Everybody on Facebook can think you're all that. But as long as you share with them that I'm not, I'm you.
Right.
That's not,
and you know what? The thing is that we're, you know, and I have to go ahead and drop this track real quick, because based on the conversations that we've had for the past few weeks, this song has stayed in my head. And I have to play it, you know, I mean, that's just me, you know, when I feel a certain way. And I'm just going to say this. I'm very blessed to have some great co-hosts. Not everybody was able to make it this evening, but they come back. Great guest, Officer Mason. I'm so thankful to know you, and you know, we're going to keep this going. Let me go ahead and play this track. See, we have a couple of minutes afterwards, but this is Janet Jackson, and I love this song because it was recorded back in the 80s, but it's definitely true, the state of the world.
The
right
homeless
now.
Problem. Good looks and
die of violence.
Tiananmen Square today.
Up to the adults to teach the children.
Period. A pain reliever. A bullet.
Attempting fast money.
Violent crimes are on the uprise.
So frustrated.
Drugs and crime spreading on the street. Kids can't find enough to eat. Now our kids can't go out and play. That's the state of the world today. Well, that's interesting. the song was recorded back in the day, and if you think about songs that were recorded back in the day, think about Marvin Gaye, What's Going On.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like almost every generation, and if you pay attention to it, Marvin Gaye, you know, and Janet didn't grow up, you know, together, but both artists acknowledged and noticed What's Going On. I played that for a reason, and I'm pretty sure I can play many other songs, which I will do on the show. And coming up next Saturday, we're going to talk about relationships, because I know a lot of individuals that have been in relationships. They've shared with me, mothers, fathers, and they're not together, you know. Why does that happen? Basically, in the Black community, not necessarily just the Black community, but why are people having children? And, I mean, it's great to have kids. That's a touchy subject, in a sense. Then when you start looking at the stories of what's going on with, you know, having children and supporting the children and, you know, and all that type of stuff, we're going to dabble into that soon and starting next Saturday. Hey, again, I want to say thank you, guys. Awesome, Mason, thank you. Janet, greatest co-host I could ever dream of to be here on the show, you know, and supporter.
Well, I'm glad to be
show.
Here with you, Michael.
All right, and we got 60 seconds left. Hey, you guys, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thank you for chiming in to the TMGS, the Michael Gaye Show, with my co-hosts, Janet Davis, Officer Crenshaw, Cotton Campbell, Bernie Jones, Denise L. Wilkerson of the legendary Ladies of Sky. And if I missed anybody, I apologize. But they'll be joining us again about the middle part of this month. Enjoy the rest of your day, the rest of your evening, the rest of the month, and we'll see you next week. God bless. Peace.
Good night.